2 days ago, I don't know why, and I don't know what the connection is, and I don't know, except some kind of intuitive, energetic force said, listen, you got this stuff sitting here, use it. So I called Stevie, made an appointment. For the first time in 20, how many years do I know Ratner? I don't know, 20 some odd years. He calls me. When did he call me? Last night. I told him, listen, Philip, I'm going to meet with Stevie tomorrow to develop a program for your Futures Bible. The people who are going to live in the future are those people who are now kids, right? Who are these kids? These kids are literally the heroes of the human race. Who are these heroes? The people who shift from being a child, which needs protection and needs and constantly receives, namely little kids, and those who become the adults. Who becomes adults? The people who we in the Jewish tradition call bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah. In the Christian tradition, they're the confirmations. So you're talking about, I don't know, millions, at least in the United States, in the English language speaking world, millions of kids every time, right? Now, so the vehicle through which all of this is going to happen is light. We're talking now about a mythic, how to retell the story. That's what you do. You, Philip, you retell the story. And the issue is that all of us know how to tell a story using a text. The word text literally means weaving, like textiles, what the word comes from. It's a Latin word. And what we're dealing with is how do you create a new weave? How do you create a new story? Now, it's not creating a new story, but it's creating a new way to tell the classical stories. Okay.
The origins of man and...
No, wait. So I said, now listen.
So what is the story?
I live in Beersheba, or Yerucham, actually. Yerucham is, why am I in Yerucham? I am in Yerucham because Simcha is there, my wife. But why is she in Yerucham? Because something like 4,000 years ago, something like this guy, who is the great, 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 great grandfather, who created this story, Avraham, had the same problem that all of us face. What do you do with your women and your children? And the story is that when he kicked out Hagar and Ishmael, and Israel is now being torn apart by the descendants of those two children, the children of Sarah and of Hagar, namely Ishmael and Isaac, who later became literally Israel, where we're now sitting, he made a choice. He, Abraham, kicked out Hagar, threw him out to die. God saved them. And what was it that saved them? It was the Be'er. And in the Arabic tradition, which is the tradition of the Bedu who live right where we are there, the well from which Hagar brought the water to save Ishmael is called Bir Rachma, Be'er of Rachma. Rachma is Rachamim, the well of compassion. And it comes from the word Rechem. Rechem is womb. So the connection of a mother to a child through the womb, carrying a child for 9 months, is the most powerful connection that exists on the planet, at least in human, I don't know, even human biological systems, I guess. Because if you look at any of the programs on, National Geographic or whatever, you see mothers who will do anything within their power to protect and feed their offspring. There's nothing more powerful than that. That tradition of Avraham starts with the first words that God tells a human being is Lech Lecha, move. Now, the rabbis say, there's a modern midrash, what does it mean Lech Lecha? Lech, go. What's to Lecha? I mean, what does the word mean, in fact? So the midrash is that it's Lech El Atzmecha, go unto yourself. In other words, there's a geographic journey that moves you through geographic space. That's what Abraham did. There's also an inner space journey. In other words, you don't have to move your body. What you have to do is move mind, consciousness, whatever it is. We know how to move atoms. This is Negroponte, being digital, who is the director of the Media Lab in MIT. So what I want to do here, this is with Ratner's stuff, is we are moving from a culture which is based on how do you shift atoms to how do you shift bits of information. That's what this computer gadgetry is all about. And now it's no longer electronics. We're no longer in the electronic world. We're into the phototronic world. We're talking about photons, packets of light. All of this is now on light kinds of stuff. The metaphor in the Bible for the divine, the spirit, is or, light. First thing that was created, vayi or. Now, it's not the same light that we switch on a light. That's day four, which is, you know, the sun and the moon and all that kind of jazz. So I told him, I want to use your stuff as a vehicle, as a core. How to retell what it is that this new generation has to learn in order to survive. What I tell them as a parent or a grandparent is interesting for me 50 years ago, but it may or may not be significant for them 50 years from now. Therefore, what is the vehicle? The vehicle is light. Now, is there a story that deals with light? I told them yes. And the story that I know, and that not only I know, but that, I don't know, 50 million other people know, is Star Wars. What does Lucas talk about in Star Wars? He says that the basic function of Star Wars is to tell the story of salvation, redemption. How do you do this? There's this constant battle between the powers of light and the powers of darkness. Darkness is Darth Vader, the Dark Father, and the light is the lightsaber. So I'm going to use the lightsaber as a model. And who are these people? These are Jedi. Jedi may be coming from, it's an Arabic root, means heroes, but it also comes from the root of Yehuda, J-D-I, Yehuda, from whom later came David and later Jesus. So this is in, right smack into the Christian tradition. Who is the hero of all of this? Yoda. What does Yoda do? Yodea, right? Yeda. That means pshat. Pshat. I don't even have to invent it.
In English?
Wait. Wait.
English we don't.
Yoda is Yodea, which means to know. So Yoda is the knower. Now, in the classical tradition, this was the idea of gnosis, the Gnostics. The Gnostics created a whole religious tradition. We are creating a new, it's not a new, but it's an old tradition wrapped around with all of this stuff.
I think I even downloaded it and have it in my computer, in which case I'll send it to you, but it's a review article, very shallow, on a new Siddur for the Tali schools. They have finally created a Siddur for the children. Also, a friend of mine in Jerusalem, who's a doctor of education and blah, 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 and who started her own gun many years ago, also involved herself in creating a creative prayer book, somewhat in the thought context, for instance, of the Steiner system, in which the children write their book from which they learn to write and to read, so that the children create. Each child creates its own prayer book with its own drawings and its own beauty and its own style, which may fit into some of the processes.
I got another question to ask you. I have a theory, which is an extension of this. The theory is the following. How do you connect with God? For, I don't know, 10,000 years? People did this through sacrifices. You took an animal. Right? Basically, it was you took you, but then it changed. You take an animal, something that you own, quotes unquotes, that's alive, and you kill it and burn it and offer it up to God. Now, so what you're doing is transforming atoms. You can only do that in one place, at least in the Jewish tradition, and at one and very specific occasions, with very rigorous regulations all about it. So first you had the Mishkan, the tabernacle, then you had the Temple 1, and then the Temple 2. After Temple 2, that was it. The temple doesn't exist. There are no more sacrifices. The rabbis were in a quandary. What do you do? So what they did was is they created a new vehicle. Words, libabai, they want the heart. How do you connect to the heart? Through words. That's how the whole tefillah developed. And the siddur came 1,000 years later. I mean, the first classical siddur we have is of Saadia Gaon. Saadia died in 942. So there's 1,000 years after the destruction of the temple. Now I got a question. In order to deal with prayer, tefillah, Sidur, you need to bring people together, right? You need to bring people. If you bring people together, you've got to house them, feed them, seat them, light, air conditioning, insurance, synagogues, churches. That's your generation and that's my generation. That's not the kids' generation anymore. These kids now are not only in geographic space where you need buildings or sidurim, they are in the cyberspace world. What does that mean? Their vehicle is no longer the story in a text on a page, but it's on a screen. And this is already ancient technology, even this snazzy one. We're now dealing with these little cell phones and brain implants and God knows what, okay? So now comes the question, is there a stage beyond different than words, where number one, you need a minion, right, to do any praying. At least that's the tradition. The minion is a community. The Eidah, I mean, that's the classical halachic of 10, of the spies that went out, came back, Eidah. But what if you can create virtual communities? You can. There are virtual communities all over the world. Now you have, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of them, for whatever reason. One of the main gurus of this modern age that we're in is Negroponte, the head of the director of the MIT Media Center. His book, Being Digital, is one of the classics. And his main thesis is that we are the first generation ever that is shifting from the manipulation of atoms and things, matter, into the manipulation of bits, information, knowledge. All the religious traditions start, I don't know, mostly anyway, that we know of, started out in how do you shift atoms, which is with animals, plants, what you sacrifice. You burn it. So you transform an atom from matter into literally smoke, okay?
Smoke goes up.
Now smoke goes up, okay. When you deal with words, tefillah, you already now not only dealing with atoms, there are no atoms to deal with, what you are dealing with is electrochemical involvements of some kind, what goes on in your mind, your consciousness.
Well, there's that and there's another element.
Which is?
Which is the making of words. I mean, if you speak the words out loud, if you just say the words inside, which we don't do, right? And the Jews traditionally, all the prayers you articulate, and you're using... You sing, you chant, and you express them with a part of your body that's physical, the vocal cords, and that physical part creates a non-physical reality, which is the sound.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
Which it could be thought of as a spiritual reality because it doesn't have substance.
Yeah, transforms your consciousness. I mean, prayer is real, and the people do it constantly, all over the place, no matter what language it is. That's practically irrelevant. But it deals with, nearly all prayers are sung. Therefore, what you're really dealing with is right hemisphere activity, not only left hemisphere activity, which is why it's so powerful. Now, these kids, not the kids who are writing their own prayer book, I mean, what they're doing is jazzing up the past. I want to ask them, how do you deal with the future? Now comes an interesting question. How do you create, or can you create, a sacred environment online on a screen that you can share with people in two places. One is in cyberspace in Siberia, C-Y-B-E-R-I-A, which is all over the planet. And you got, I don't know, of the world, you got at least a billion people now who are in some way involved in cyberspace.
Really?
Oh yeah, easy. Using internet. I mean, the whole economy and all da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Every school in the world is teaching exactly ABCs when you really don't need it. That's another story. What they're doing is teaching education. They're not teaching learning. But learners learn where learners are, so many kids are leaving school. All kinds of stories. Doesn't matter. Then comes this another significant question. What is it that you use if you use letters and words and language that are static on a page in a text of a book? What can you do when you can move letters and images and music and sound and video and God knows what else these people are going to come up with on screens and on your telephone, on your, cell phones, that is just beginning. We're just talking about the third generation. I mean, in 5 years from now, the third generation is going to be an archaeological piece. How amusing. Now, there's another question. And the other question is even more interesting, I think. I don't know, more interesting, but interesting. NASA came with us to a problem. Us, the National World Network of Religious Futurists. It was General Lord. And he said, listen, in another 10 years, 15 years, we're going to have an international space station. Not only we, the United States, but they're still one of the biggies. As of now, all the space stations are dealing with, are being staffed by scientists. So mostly all they what they do is spend a lot of their time doing whatever experiments they're doing. Okay. They are now planning an international space station. Space station will house maybe 15 people. But the next thing is maybe 30 years from now, 50 years from now, when these kids are going to be my age. I'm not talking about the way far future. I'm talking about within their lifetime. And you got to remember that these kids who are now going to be bar mitzvah are going to live to be over 100. So we're talking about the 22nd century of these kids. All right? Being over 100 is no big deal anymore. So they're going to have, they're planning for communities of 10,000 people who will be living all of their lives in outer space, in orbit. So there's a lot of very serious questions, okay? One, how do you feed them? How do you, and they are totally, they have to create a total environment because otherwise they die. So the question is, we're talking about kids who are going to be born in space, live in space, and die in space. In other words, they're going to live their lives in space. They may come back to visit Earth with, yeah, well, what an interesting place. However, and this is no small matter, because if the issues of weather change and biological degradation is going to be carried apace, the Earth is going to be destroyed. So either humanity gets destroyed with it, or humanity has to seek other places where it's going to live. All right, that's a long introduction to the question, okay. What is the analog, the analogy of synagogues and churches in outer space? Now, you're not going to bring a shart or a synagogue or a temple out in outer space. You're not going to bring bricks and stones. What do you do? How do you create what, in effect, would be some kind of optical or some kind of, nobody really knows, kind of environment up there that you can create a spiritual environment? How do you do this? First comes the question, is it doable? My guess is anything is doable if you're creative enough. And the other thing is that who's going to pay for it? Well, you got two answers. One answer is the governments. But there's another answer, which I think is even more dependable. For the first time in human history ever, humans have been able to get out of orbit, to get into orbit, out of space, right? There are three people, two guys and one lady, who have gone civilians as tourists, paid $20 million, the only ones who were desperate enough to do this were the Russians. The Americans said, don't bother me. But at the Ansari Prize, Ansari is the lady, who a year ago won $10 million. This is Alan's money. Alan is the guy who is the co-director, Paul Allen, of Microsoft, right? To send up a rocket with people in it into outer space and bring them back. In 2 weeks' time, do it again and bring them back alive. They did it already.
Really?
So now there are tourist spaceports. There may be 15 of them now that are being planned for tourists. In other words, they're now talking, this is now 2006, we're now talking about 2010, that it's probably going to not cost you $20 million, but it'll cost you $50,000. In another 10 years after that, it'll probably cost you $10,000. $10,000 is like a cruise ship now, right? I mean, it's not a lot of money. What's happening is that the world is becoming richer and richer and poorer and poorer. Poorer and poorer are never going to go anywhere. The richer and richer are going to always want more interesting and exciting. Now, anybody who goes up to outer space, if he's willing to spend X amount of dollars, is probably also willing to spend $1,000, $2,000 for a chaplain to be a spiritual advisor. You're going up, you're going into a technological wow, but there's also a spiritual dimension to this, to be floating around in space. I mean, it's never happened before. How do you deal with this? Et cetera, et cetera. Transforms people's lives, like Edgar Mitchell, who created the Noetic Sciences. There's a lot of it. Okay. So the issue is, how do you begin to train people? Now, this is adults or kids. It doesn't matter. Can you imagine giving a bar mitzvah gift instead of going to a safari in Africa? It's okay. I'll send you up to the moon for a week, vacation. It won't cost that much. I mean, once the economics are not the critical factor, but once the technological crises are determined, and it seems as though it's doable. Do know that there are at least two things that are happening that are critically. Thing one is that in the past, the overwhelming majority of religious environments were communal. So you have a minion, or you have a people, or you have, let's say, in Varanasi, you got 2 million people who come, for whatever. So you're talking about large groups of people creating congregations.
The monks, the individuals, and the meditators up in the cave.
Now, parallel to this, not instead of, but in addition to, parallel to, you have these individuals. For whatever reason, you're talking about individuals, you're talking about Buddha, you're talking about Jesus, you're talking about Moses, Abraham, monks who are by themselves, women who are by themselves, et cetera, okay? Who go up into the mountaintop, and there are lots of different kinds of mountaintops. In all of the literature, like Megatrends 2000, the last chapter that what Nesbitt writes, and the book that The World is Flat, Friedman writes, is that one of the main characteristics of this modern world is the power of the individual. Now, it's not the individual alone, which is what these people are. Separate, bodeh mevudad, me, myself, and God. It is now the individual networked. So what you really now have are individuals networked through the internet to other individuals in many different ways. It's not just one network. Each of us are connected to half a dozen different networks, depending on what it is that we want to do. And these networks are being, not only the power of them is being developed, but what a network is being developed. So the issue now is this spiritual kind of stuff. There's a spiritual renaissance taking place. Not a religious renaissance, it's a spiritual renaissance. This is what's going on in this whole world of the transmodern. It's the post-postmodern. Some of this individuals, so therefore it's the individual. Therefore, it's the people on the fringes. My guess is that real creativity is happening on the fringes, not in the center. The center, the mainline churches, the mainline synagogues are becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. This is the genius of Zalman, who was on the fringes, decided to stay on the fringes, and create whatever, and all these new kinds of renewal people are all on the fringes. Some of it is mishuga. Some of it we, who are in the interior world, think it's outright crazy. You can criticize for whatever. But these are the pioneers. Not every pioneering thing works. Or works for everybody. Nothing's going to work for everybody. But you're going to have such a variety that what these kids are beginning to do is to develop new forms. Now, I'll give you an example. Shut. Are you aware that as a direct outgrowth of the power of Star Wars, which is just a movie, basically, and it's just a story that one guy developed. No. There is now a Jedi religion. Now, in 2000, the Commonwealth, the British Commonwealth, which is, I don't know how many hundreds of millions, did a survey, a census, actually. And they asked all kinds of questions from all of the English-speaking worlds. One of them was religion. So there's a whole list. You know, there's Jewish, Buddhist, and then about 17 different Christian ones, whatever it is. And then there's on the very bottom, other. In New Zealand and in Australia, interesting, in the Pacific Rim, which is where all the new stuff is happening, by the way, 10,000 people put down Jedi. When it went back to London, where it's all tabulated, these people didn't know what the hell to do with it, because it doesn't exist. So they just discarded it. In other words, it wasn't tabulated. There was a court. They brought the court to a court, an English court, in London. What do you mean you discarded it? So they said, what are you talking about? There is no such thing as a Jedi religion. So it's not so. If you happen to go into Wikipedia, or you go into Google, key in Jedi religion, you will find, and I just happen to have it, a whole, but there is more than that. When they asked that question in England, I mean the British Isles, all right, the number of people who responded as Jedis was the fourth largest of them all. The first was Christian, the second was Muslim, the third was Hindu, and the fourth was Jedi. Far more than Jews, than Buddhists, than anybody else. So the British Commonwealth people said, what the hell is going on? I mean, you can play a game and say it doesn't exist up to a point. But new religions are developed. Now, what do you do? I mean, how do you Jedi, whatever the hell it is? So they created a proxeum, a school, and it's online. And I got all the stuff with me to show you. And it all deals with all the, what we call all the goodies, you know, justice and this and that and taking care of the da-da-da-da-da-da. And you have a story. And you have a magical story. Yeah, you have a new mythos. What is a mythos? A story. More than that, that's Lucas. Sure. Came these two Chicago Polish guys, the Warszawski brothers, 1999. What sermon can we give humanity for the 21st century? And they created another myth, which is Matrix. They created two films. One is the first Matrix, and then the second was the second Matrix, which was too long, so they divided it into two. So there are now three Matrix movies. The whole thing deals with what Lucas was talking about when he started in the 1970s, the first one that came out, so he started thinking about this in the 60s, was the battle between good and evil. Light and dark, yin and yang, you know, all this kind of classical stuff, right out of Joseph Campbell, right? The hero's journey, classic stuff, just put in modern garb, not just, but in modern garb, okay. The Warszawski brothers used another model. They took two sources, Midrash, basically Midrash. One is the Bible, Neo is Jesus, right? The Messiah. You got the Oracle, which is always the woman. You got the Morpheus. You have Trinity. I mean, all these are biblical characters. And then comes the most critical question. What is it that we're dealing with? We're dealing with reality, right? What is reality? You know? So they bring in Mr. Oldie, Plato, where Plato deals with his, it's a story of the cave. You know, what are people? People are sitting in a cave and don't see reality. What they see are shadows. So the whole thing is, in the past, which is my generation and your generation, we're not talking about biblical times, we're talking about our lifetime. The critical issue was good guys and bad guys. And your job is to uphold the good guys and defeat the bad guys so that ultimately the good guys win and the bad guys lose. Good old Zoroastrian tradition of 5,000 years already. Comes the Warszawski brothers and they made sure that every place on the planet where this was shown, it was shown on the weekend of Easter. Easter is always beginning rebirth, right? Pesach, Easter, okay? And it always had to be shown in special theaters and all of that. And just by the way, since the beginning of cinema, which is 100 years plus, 1898, in Paris where it started, more books have been written about the movie Matrix than any other single film ever. Already, and it just came out in 2000. This is just 2006. So when you take as your base the Bible and Plato, you're dealing with some pretty heavy stuff. What they did is translate this into the new medium. Now that new medium is film.